closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey everybody, it's Two Magicians, One Mic. I'm in a closet, and Simon, I don't know where you are.
I'm in a hotel room in Chicago, which is better than at sea.
It is, and it's better than being in a closet in a sketchy apartment in Branson, Missouri. So that's
good. Are you literally in a closet? Are there coats with you?
Not coats, but lots of my wife's clothing and my button-down shirts. This is the best place. That's a closet. I could be recording right now, hiding from my wife and dogs making noise, watching the television. So
it makes it small and sound muffling. I'm not in a big hotel room, but it's like I'm worried about the echo. But we'll just have to deal with it.
We'll find out.
We apologize.
We'll fix that in post. It's good. which sometimes I do. Sometimes I do that.
Yeah. That's actually one of the things I find fascinating with things like photography and videography is even though these days we have the technology and technique to fix so much in post, there are still things we still can't, like something being out of focus. You can't refocus something in post. We just do not have that ability yet. Or getting the lighting right. Right. If something's poorly lit, there's just nothing you can do to make it better lit.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy because I mean, you can make something blurry. You can literally put things into images. You can change backgrounds. You can make something look completely different.
Swap people's faces and their heads and detail and everything, but we can't fix the lighting or the focus.
It is pretty funny. That is like the one. Yeah. I mean, once robots can do that, it's game over, I think.
Yeah, we're done. Skynet and everything. It's funny actually to get into why that is. I mean, it goes back to like actual information theory and data theory about like, you know, because you haven't actually recorded the information based on the photons hitting the lens of the camera after having reflected off the thing. And it actually gets into some really fascinating scientific and philosophical territory, but let's not go into that now.
Why would we go into that? We never go into that on this podcast, yeah. So that's good. We keep it all about magic. I think it's like this podcast is a bait and switch for anybody who's been listening this long. And I want to thank everybody who does listen because like I just looked at the downloads last week. I'm like, wow, a lot of people are listening to this and I don't know why. So thank you so much.
Well, we know how so a few people have written in to say why they listen. And it's really nice. It's not just sort of it's gratifying, which is nice, but it's more useful to know. It's useful information about, oh, what are people liking? Oh, cool. Okay. That's what we can give them more of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was doing that tour with Justin, after he would do the photos and stuff with people after shows, and he would ask, you know, people would come up and say, hi, good job, and he would ask, what was your favorite part? And to me, that's something I never thought of. I was like, oh, that seems a little bit weird to ask that. It seems a little bit, I don't know, on the spot. But it actually, I kind of came around to it where, like, oh, that actually makes sense. You find out what people's favorite part of the show is, and you know, like, what to kind of aim towards in future, you know, changings of altering of the show.
God, yeah, 100%. The version, like, I mean, that was the whole Institute of Audience Studies, which one day the website will be ready. One day.
You got to make
like
your WordPress mobile friendly first.
So. Oh, God, that's a whole thing. That was, what, 7 or 8 episodes ago now? I was like, yep, this website, it's coming.
That hasn't been much time at all. So that's
yeah, great. Exactly. It's barely yesterday. The fucking perfectionism, God, it's a problem. But it's working and I'm using it. It's just building infrastructure to let other people make accounts and use it is just much more complex than that and still coming. But even just in person, I 100% agree. Going, oh, what was your favorite thing about the show is an easy question. I also then always add for people, and if you had to cut 5 minutes for time, what would you take out? And that was the way I worked out how to phrase it. That was a phrasing that people will actually reply to. Because if you go, what did you like the least? They go, nothing. I loved it. You're great. It's like, yeah, shut up. Like, don't. I'm not a diva. I can take it. And yeah, I found that wording. If we had to make it 5 minutes shorter, what bit would you leave out? Because then that gives them a way to, you know, not be criticizing it, quote unquote, but still tell you what bit was the weakest.
Yeah.
I found that really useful.
I think in my case, they'd be like, well, you know, you could only do 5 minutes and you'd be happy. So,
Nick, none of that self-effacing bullshit.
You know what? I heard on another podcast, you know, apparently millennials aren't liking the self-deprecating humor. And that's my whole thing. I mean, I've just been stealing that from Conan O'Brien since day one. So I may not have a job in a couple of years.
Yeah, but there's also a happy medium with self-deprecating humor, and the happy medium is a very, very tiny light amount in passing. But the jokes where the joke is, "Hey, I suck," like, that's not actually funny. Like, it doesn't work. Like, it sort of works. It works in Britain, and it works for some generations. But you can sort of be mildly wryly, like W-R-Y-L-Y, like wryly self-deprecating, without being like, "Yeah, I suck at everything, and my show is terrible, and I'm bad." Because the problem with that is, I think it doesn't work comedically because it's blatantly untrue. Right? If people have enjoyed the last 45 minutes and you go, "Oh, people enjoy 5 minutes," it's just like, well, no, that's actually just a factually inaccurate statement. Like, shut up. Whereas if you go, you know, if I was living the dream, like, then that's funny because that's a surprising insight into the fact that, e.g., your life is not the perfect charmed existence that it seems to be on the outside. And that's interesting, funny self-deprecation because it's illuminating and enlightening and surprising, as opposed to just, well, no, you're wrong. Your show is fucking good. Like, what's wrong with you, you idiot?
Sure. Yeah.
That's my theory.
No, I think that's correct. I think that's a good assessment. I think it's necessary in the show to know, for the audience to know, that you're not taking yourself too seriously. But I can't even do it unless I'm actually doing the show, but the line is something like, "I'll do this behind my back because I've had way too much free time and no friends in middle school." And it's always like kind of a subtle burn in the audience, but I love throwing stuff like that in. So, like, even if half the crowd doesn't get it, that's fine. You know, it's, some of those jokes are just for me to kind of let them know. I know that I'm not a doctor. I know that I'm not changing the world here, but I'm still trying to entertain you.
So, production side note, when you in post, just take out the last 20 or 30 seconds of my silence because it had an ambulance siren in it.
You know what? I don't even have to. The robot that I use,
I
think it's called Auphonic. Our good friend Taylor Hughes turned me on to it. I just upload the audio and they take out the background stuff, which I'm saying this now, and I'm probably not even going to go and check. So, if you all heard an ambulance, that means it didn't work.
Well, I just meant because normally getting out background noise is hard because it's also happening in the background of speech, which you need to keep. So it's difficult. But when I was saying nothing and there was an ambulance, it's so easy just to chop that entire chunk of my audio. And you'll only lose my white noise, which is easy to strip anyway with any other
time. I've been getting better. Like, this isn't going to be too bad. I've been getting better at our Skype conversation. For anybody who, like, is doing long-distance conversations and recording, just know that every time Simon's on the other end of the world from me, I am literally going, you know, every time you talk and every time I talk, I am cutting out a chunk of 3 seconds and editing the audio that way because there is such a delay that even we're not hearing when we're talking, just the way it's recording. I've been getting better at it. I think the last episode was probably my best work. It's still not the greatest, but it's an art form of just like making it sound like we're syncing up in real time. It's not an easy thing.
It's amazing the skills that you end up gaining incidentally to something like that. Magic has been amazing to that. I mean, I got into magic when I was 18 in first year university. And since then, the amount of varied esoteric skills I have gained directly through magic because, e.g., I wanted to make a trick. Like, I had an idea for a trick. Oh, therefore, I need to stick these things to each other. Therefore, I needed to learn about adhesives because it turns out some things are quite complex to stick to each other. Now, 20 years later, I have this extensive knowledge of industrial adhesives and solvents that is actually very useful in a lot of situations that I only have because of magic. And that's the tip of the iceberg, like crafting skills, tech skills. I learned to make websites because I wanted to make a magic website. Now I'm making other websites. All kinds of stuff like graphic design, like how to use Photoshop, how to use Illustrator, how to do color balancing, how to do layout theory, like fonts, like all that kind of stuff. Like photography skills I learned because of magic. I needed to take promo photos. And it's great. It's such a cool source of interesting skills if you lean into it.
Yeah, I think you seem to be able to do that in kind of all aspects of magic. I'm similar in that. Yeah, I mean, I learned how to build websites for magic and, you know, photography, all kind of similar path. But I think there are friends of ours that kind of go the opposite way. Well, they'll just find somebody to do it for them, which is probably the smarter method and less time consuming.
Yeah. But also, I mean, and that just comes down to everything, right? It depends on what do you want out of life? You know, what do you enjoy? What is fulfilling to you? What do you want your life to look like? And I really enjoy learning and discovering and gaining skills and climbing little mastery mountains. I find that very intrinsically engaging and compelling.
I had this thought.
Excuses to do it.
Yeah, I had this thought yesterday or the day before. I think most magicians are just like people who aren't smart enough to be full-time engineers. And I think... I'm putting myself in that category where it's like, I like to know how things work. I like to know how the computer works and to take apart a phone or take apart a car and how would you put it back together? But I always get to like the halfway point and then go, I don't want to put this back together. This seems like a lot of work, but just inherently knowing how something works, I think is what kind of drives our curiosity, which is, you know, enough for me to keep going.
Yeah, completely. Well, it's also that, I mean, it's a dichotomy that I get into in all my shows is going, okay, you know, the categories of people who you generally find this divide into people who want to understand the truth seekers and the people who just want to be amazed and drift the wonder seekers and how there is no real way to keep both those people happy with the same experience most of the time. And then how you deal with that and how you approach that. And it gets into a very interesting conversation. And personally, I think people who don't want to know how magic works are dumb. Like, that's an exception. That's not fair. That is unreasonable. I find it hard to relate to them. Is the difference? There's no judgment there, but I cannot relate to that at all.
It sounds like there's a fair amount of judgment.
There's some judgment.
Call you out on that one.
Yeah, that's fair. You're right. But I've learned to sort of live and let live.
You know? As someone who judges like constantly, I know when there's a red flag of judgment.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I have been working on that. I'm sure my wife and my family members would disagree, but I have been consciously working to not judge people in public as much.
Like, if you go from like 90% judgmental asshole to 86% judgmental asshole, that is progress. Like, still better. Yeah.
And I'm in Branson, Missouri, doing a great gig, getting paid well, and doing this nice big theater. For 2.5 weeks, and I am completely the religious opposite end of almost everybody who lives here. But I'm finding common ground, and I am looking towards them as humans and not towards people who are trying to convert me. And it's been fine. You know, nobody's like asked me if I'm going to hell yet or anything. I'm sure it's coming, but everybody has been super nice, and everybody's great out here. And it's, you know, that's kind of what you should be seeking. You should be seeking the commonalities between people, not the differences. And but I did have a kind of a funny thing. We did dress rehearsal 2 days ago, and I did the bottles trick. And after, the director goes, "Hey, I really love that bottles trick, but you can't do it because there's no alcohol on the premise." And I was like, "He's like, can you change it to like Coke or something?" I go, "Let me call the Japanese man who built the trick for me. I'll find out." But it ended up being fine, where I got a text yesterday where I can put it back in the show. But it's funny how just certain things around here are very different. You have to be very squeaky clean around here. And on one end, I respect that. And on the other hand, I'm like, you're all living in a bubble. This is all pretend.
Yeah. one thought on that. Like, this is still you performing silently. I've sort of seen you in both modes.
The show now is a combination of silent and talking. So I go in and out of silent pieces. So I'll open with a silent piece. I'll close with a silent piece. And there's a couple bits in the middle. But this is a weird gig where I'm doing 10 minutes up top. And then two other 5-minute bits in this music show. And we actually put in an illusion that we're doing too, Kristen and I, and that's kind of been a whole new experience as well for us.
Well, the thought is, depending on like where you are in the silence, like whether you do this verbally or with a sign, I think there's a chance there to actually put a joke about, you know, not bottles are empty, no actual alcohol is here, like as a comedic thing.
Oh yeah, I think you're right.
Because then that's a chance for a bit that it is. Because that's funny and interesting, and that's a very relevant thing. That if you're in a dry county, is that what they call them in America?
It's not even a dry county, because
they have them in America.
No, you're right. We've been to them. In a lot of college towns, will have that. And this isn't a dry county. It's just like the theme park itself, which has all these theaters in it. does not sell alcohol and is, you know, very Christian based. And it took everything for me not to mention Jesus's first magic trick. But I just kind of yes-anded it and go, okay, you're the director, and just adjusted and didn't fight it. And luckily they came back and said it's fine. But just one of those things of being willing to know when to fight for something and know when to go, okay, we'll swap it out for something else.
Yeah, choosing which hill to die on.
Yeah.
Important. Which hill? We're going to die on a hill. Which one's it going to be? Not this one. This is not the one.
Yeah, and it's not worth it. I think if they would have told me I couldn't do the balloon trick, I'd be like, okay, that's. I'm pretty sure that's why I got hired for this gig. So, what do you want me to do? This is a 3,000 seat amphitheater. So it's like I need visual stuff, and my stuff is not huge. So
are there there's dry counties with no alcohol? Are there deflated counties with no balloons?
I don't know. I mean, there's anti-latex counties, maybe.
Rubber counties.
No joke, ships for the longest time where you couldn't have latex. Like when I first started doing Disney, I almost couldn't do the balloon, and I almost couldn't do the balloon animal thing because they didn't allow latex on the ships, and that went on for a while.
Why?
Latex? Allergies or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one.
And four bits in the show are latex based. So
I think that's, I remember something I really enjoyed that you did back at the castle in the parlor was you had those, you know, Marcel Marceau-esque signs that were announced the name of the trick, you know, non-vegan magic and Xbox and all those different things. And like latex based magic would be a great title for one of those.
Yeah.
Given that there's clearly three routines you could use it for.
Yeah, take it down, then put it back up. That'd be funny.
Yeah. That's like a while back, that really famous Pete Holmes bit about magic's done with magnets, right?
Magnets.
I don't know if you've seen it. Magnets! It's a great routine. Pete Holmes, what is it? Starts with, aren't you glad you're not a magician? He's a very funny man. And the funny thing after that bit came out, I sat down and I did an inventory and realized that I think in an hour show where I had maybe a dozen routines, I think eight of them involved magnets in some way.
Yeah.
It was hilarious the degree to which actually, and none of them were as the primary method either. Like, that's what's so funny. It wasn't, you know, making things move or levitate or whatever. It was mostly in terms of like logistical prop management. If you want things to hold together and then detach and then retach conveniently, like fucking magnets, man.
Really? Yeah. I mean, it was, it's insane how much, especially if you buy kind of like smaller tricks, just a lot of the people, you know, that worked on, the Netflix show or are currently working on the Netflix show. It's amazing how much of the stuff that they build.
Oh, yeah.
They just have like a whole inventory of different sizes of magnets. And I hope I'm not giving away too much, but it just, you're right. It's the easiest way to keep something together. And I mean, I use two or three different methods in the show that use magnets. Yeah.
And it's such a joke. Yeah. And like, honestly, all of the things that I do with magnets, and I think what could be done without magnets, but just much more annoyingly. Like, it'd be much more irritating. There'd be just more setup and reset would take much longer because you'd be sticking things and then unsticking things and like, fiddly. Because with magnets, life's good. Just smooth, convenient.
I mean, we're doing this new illusion with cellophane, and to get it to stick to this pole, I have to use literally an entire spool of double-sided tape. And every show now I have to put tape on. I'm like, man, is there an easier method for this? And it sounds so silly and stupid, but when you get down to the nitty-gritty of certain illusions and just like the time that goes into just...
Yeah, what do you got to do?
Setup of taping the pole every single show. And... You know, you're always trying to like streamline. How can you make something go quicker? How can you set up something quicker?
Yeah. Well, because it's also, as we all know, it's not just about how is the show. It's about your quality of life, you know, during, before and after the shows. Like when you're traveling, like that's, you know, if I have to do a trick that requires like shipping a giant crate of gear, like I'm sad now. I'm not enjoying being alive. I might as well go back to business consulting and quit magic because I think I'm not having fun anymore. I'm just hating being alive. And again, the quality of life factor, it's a big thing.
Totally, yeah. I mean, I think we both have illusion friends that don't even think twice about it, but yeah. I got...
Well, if illusions are your passion, then what are you going to do? Like, you're stuck on that hill.
that's a whole thing you can't come down from. But like I said, we put this thing in, and it travels, it breaks down, it travels, but there is one thing that is just slightly too long to fit in a checked bag. It's like a pole. And now I have to go, okay, because I got this thing just so we could travel with it and it would be easy to go. And now I'm like, okay, do I bring a golf club case every single time we're flying, or do I ship it? And now it's become I can see it becoming a headache pretty easily. So there is no like, this was supposed to be the simple solution for an illusion, and it's not. It's a lie. There's never an easy method to this.
See, I mean, my brain's just gone off into all kinds of similar things and logistical issues and traveling and what I'm trying to do with prop minimization and so on. And it's still like every now and then there's something that's absolutely – if something's good enough, it's worth like doing whatever's necessary to make it happen and ship it and bring it. And I've absolutely done that. But not like it's still not fun. It's just annoying, and I find I'm sad at the end of the day just because there are so many great things that don't need that as well.
Yeah.
So you've really got to make sure it's something really transcendent enough to justify – all that effort. If it is, great. It's often not.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, just the time management itself, like for something that's 2.5 minutes long, is it getting the reaction that's worth the, you know, hours of, you know, setup, shipping, travel? And if it's not, I think it needs to be cut, and just knowing what's necessary for what you're, you know, kind of presenting to the audience.
Yeah. Yeah, completely.
Oh, you get a message.
There you go. You can cut that too.
No, we'll keep it in.
Verisimilitude. Nothing if not. It's actually funny going back to what people, when people write in, the one universal is people seem to like the realness and lack of pretense and BS and image crafting about this podcast. So I guess, yeah, let's keep in the ding noises.
Keeping the BS and the laziness, which, like I said, the past 2 or 3 episodes that we've done where you're on the other end of the world, not lazy. Took me over an hour and a half just to edit that damn 30-minute conversation.
This is the big note for you, is you've got to cut out the factually inaccurate self-deprecating humor.
It's all true.
That's your note.
It's all true. I'm not taking that note. It's all true.
I also just realized I don't know how to mute. Wait, no, I'm very confused because I've got my, as always, I've got my phone running that I'm talking to you on via an earbud, and then my laptop's running where I'm actually recording the audio, and I'm actually not even sure what dinged.
A message.
It must have been the laptop, yeah. Now, if I mute the laptop, yeah, that's okay because it'll still be recording, right?
So if you're a professional like me, you would have turned off the Wi-Fi, so this wouldn't be a problem.
That's a good point. I should have thought of that. Laptop's now muted. Okay, no more dings.
It's okay. It keeps it real. I know you have to go soon, so this is a bit shorter episode, but
I've still got some time.
So. Okay. I wrote this down. I was doing my buddy's theater, and, he had a guy, a great magician, introing me, super nice guy, amazing. But he gave me this intro of, if you don't know who Nick Paul is, you will by the end of this, and will be telling your friends that you have to see him the next time Nick Paul comes in town. And I didn't know how to approach it and go, please stop saying that, because it puts so much, and I could feel it. The second I walked on stage, the audience just arms crossed going, okay, entertain me. Yeah. And that is like the worst possible intro, but he was, you know, he was an Air Force veteran. He's an amazing guy, a great magician. And I didn't want to say, hey, please stop saying that, when I probably should have.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. You gotta address that. I mean, that's that, did we ever talk about that? I have no idea what we've talked about. The Josh Jay like psychology department study on magic, where they got a bunch of normal people and did really extensive, detailed like interviews about their perceptions of magic. And one of the most interesting findings of it was that the number one thing that affects people's perception of the quality of a show is an intro that establishes credibility. And they tested it with like, they did shows with where there's no intro. The guy does the show for a bunch of people. Intros that establish they've won a bunch of awards. Oh, this person's won all these awards. Please welcome person. They did ones where it establishes like celebrity cred. Like this person's performed for all these different famous people. Here's so-and-so. And then ones that were based on skill. Like this person can do things that like only 10 people in the world can do. Please welcome so-and-so. And what they found basically is the different kinds of intro didn't matter. As long as it establishes some kind of impressive, wow, this person must be great credibility, it increased audience scores of the quality of the show by 50% higher than what they would have scored without a credibility building intro, which is horrifying. Like, it is horrifying that people are that susceptible to influence that way. But once you realize that, I've always not liked having cred building intros. I always liked my show to stand on its own, just like, please welcome Simon Coronel, and then I would prove myself. But since hearing that finding, like, holy shit, if it's that much of an effect, yeah, I now wrote and have a standard written out cred building intro for an MC to use. Like, I hate it, and it makes me sad that that's the way the world works, because also that's why, like, our politics are screwed and our social media is fucked, because humans are sheep and so influenceable by stuff like that. But God, if we're just leaving that value on the table, gotta have those intros.
You do, and I think, like, mine is, if I hate when it's butchered, but I've been doing this for a while, but I kind of got expanded by working with Michael Rayner. His is a great intro. I believe it's, you've seen him on The Late Late Show, you've seen him on The Tonight Show, and you've seen him performing in front of a TJ Maxx. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Rayner, and all of those are true, because, you know, he's like, did a festival or something. Or I think it's like America's Got Talent, Late Late Show, Sesame Street, and TJ Maxx. And I love that, you know, high, and then self-deprecation right up top for them to go, okay, I guess this is going to be different.
Not a massive wanker as well.
Yeah.
And again, if in doubt, I figure a good rule of thumb for life, whether it's shows, whether it's business, whether it's personal relationships, if in doubt, make factual statements. Like, just if in doubt, let's say things that are empirically true. Like, it's almost always a good move and not a bad move. Like, yes, he was on this TV show. Like, cool, that's good. It's a factually true statement. And then it will also end up making people go, ooh, wow, that's impressive. Like, because they don't realize it's really not. But
hey, it's funny that you mentioned that with the intro. I've been coming around to that in cruise ships of, I used to be super against, you know, trying to force a standing ovation, and I still haven't tried it yet, but I am coming around to the idea of just like holding it a little bit longer, standing there with the arms out, taking a little bit slower of a bow. I've always been so against that, but it's, you know, it's job reinforcement, it's job longevity in many cases, depending on the situation. And the older I get, the more I realize it's, you know, it's in some ways it's as necessary as doing a good show, is just kind of force that. And I still don't truly believe that, and I kind of hate that thought.
I'm still 100% against that. Like, if I see someone doing, like, here's the thing. Yes, it's true. Like, there is that reinforcement factor that if people have a visible reaction to a show, even they themselves will subconsciously process it as better. Like, that's a known thing psychologically. But, like, the way to do that is, there's ways you can structure the show, like having, like, musical swells and a, you know, final number that's high energy and, like, all that stuff. But, like, the actual gratuitous forcing of it, like, hell no. Never in a million years. If I'm ever doing that, like, get a gun and shoot me. Like, I'm telling you that now.
Well,
like,
I mean, I say the same thing for me, too.
A blatant, you know, forcing into it, I'm like, I lose massive respect for that person.
Totally. Like, and I don't mean it in that case, but just in terms of, like you said, structuring it, I'm trying to get to it. Yeah, where it's as simple as a music cue sometimes, which is so funny. You realize that, and you see movies do that all the time. It's like, oh, this is just a simple manipulation. Spell. Yeah.
And the other thing that you realize is that most standing ovations are, like, emotion driven. It's feeling driven. It's like your level of connection and affection and appreciation and whatever for the audience and of the performer, I mean, and their journey and all that stuff. And, like, that gets into a whole thing that I'm not an expert on. But a lot of it is not just a case of, like, big, flashy, boom. It's a lot of it can be emotionally set up. And I think about that stuff as well. But yeah, in a subtle way, not a blatant, like, oh, I always dreamed of that standing ovation. Like, no. get a life and get a career and get some standards and make your show actually good. Jesus Christ, you hack. Oh God, no time for that.
I think, I mean, in my case, I'm realizing that I know one of the reasons I'm not getting it is because I end with the balloon trick, and at the end I get it wrong purposely, and it loses the energy and the momentum. And it's tricky because I love that bit and I love that beat and I think it's so important. And then I have to rebuild it up. And I honestly think it's because of that last 15 seconds of purposely getting it wrong, then getting it right, is I'm losing the energy, the momentum of the audience and the emotion to like get them to stand up and feel good about that moment. And that's a restructuring of the show I'm going through right now, because I love closing on that, but I think it's honestly hurting me in terms of reviews just because it's going last. And that is the most frustrating thing to think about, because just moving stuff around in the show to get a standing ovation is the wrong reason in my mind to be doing it. So
yeah, God, this whole standing ovations are like the penis size of magicians. Like it's such a it's such the wrong thing to be obsessing over, and everyone's obsessing over it. Like it really is such a bullshit thing to be thinking about, but then people are clearly thinking about it, including, and this is where it's a genuine problem, like reviewers and bookers thinking about that, and they shouldn't be. Like that's not the actual mark of a good show, but it's an easily visible, measurable mark of a show. It's also like digital cameras and the megapixel count back in like the 2000s when digital cameras were a new thing. And everyone was just like dick swinging based on how many megapixels is this camera. And that was, as you probably know, not the mark of the quality of a camera, but it was the easily measurable, easily understandable, easily marketable thing. So that's what everyone ended up obsessing over. And manufacturers would make cameras that were worse in order to have bigger megapixel counts because they knew that would sell. Even though their camera was worse off, like by doing that sometimes, by putting, you know, the tech into the megapixel sensor size rather than the actual, like all the other good things that actually makes a camera and a photo image good. And it's such a problem. But
That's totally true. And that's such a good metaphor for so much entertainment, especially a lot of the productions I'm seeing advertised out here. But you know what? They're selling tickets and they're getting butts in the seats and they know what the market is. And I think in our case, you know, that is what we're performing for. And I've been reading this book of essays that Steve Cohen put out he does that show in Chamber Magic in New York, and Vanishing Ink put out a book of essays called Evergreen. And he talks about producing your own show and everything he's learned in the past 18 years of doing this. And he simply just kind of got sick of going out and performing in other locations. He wanted to create his own location and wanted to have people come to him. And that's been a thought that's been on my mind quite a bit of, you know, if people were coming to you, if you got to that point where you could successfully and regularly keep people coming to you, it would change the opinion of the show and it would change what you can do with the show. Because you'd be more in creative control, I think.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, there's a whole bunch of layers to that, but that's a whole different journey in conversation.
I can tell by that phrasing, you're like, I'm done. It's time to go.
Well, I sadly do need to dash off very soon. I have to get to a meeting. I'm in Chicago. It's one of those things that, you know, blah, 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 can't talk about it, secret project. Also, screw people when they, like, I think it's called vague booking, where you make a Facebook post that's deliberately vague to get attention. Like, screw that as well. Things that will make me lose respect for people. But yeah, it's just thing. It's blah under NDA for the moment, which it's not, which doesn't mean it's exciting or cool or special. It just means I can't actually talk about it. But it's a fun project. It may be good. We'll see.
That's fun. Well, like I said, try to check out the Chicago Magic Lounge at some point. Well, you can't.
Oh my God. Sunday. So I did. I went there yesterday just to have a look. And that place is amazing.
Yeah.
Like I was talking to one, I can't remember his name, but the guy who runs it. When I heard, oh yeah, Chicago Magic Lounge, I assumed it would be some kind of vaguely dingy venue, because they always are. Whenever there's a magic venue somewhere, it's always like, oh, it's a back room. It's been converted into a thing. Holy crap. I wasn't ready for what an amazing venue it is.
I can't wait to get back there. I did a weekend of shows in July, and then they treat you well, and it's such a cool space. And if you're in Chicago, definitely check it out.
Like it's more amazing. Like, you know, I'm saying, oh yeah, it was amazing. Like it's more amazing than that. I can't even really quite do justice to what a fucking great venue it is. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, they designed it very well.
Like, you know, I don't get impressed by shit easily. This venue's impressive.
Oh, we know, Simon. We know.
That's the thing. I'm like, I think that's important, because then when you actually rave about something, you know it's completely, deeply sincere. As opposed to people who are like, always positive, everything's great. Like, I don't believe anything you tell me, because you say everything's great, even if it sucks. Like, I have no reason to believe your recommendation. Like, that's no good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my wife knows me very well. She's like, man, if you're really talking about this, you must actually enjoy it. So I think that's a good thing. And
Well, that's the thing. It's like everything else. It's do as you would be done by. It's the golden rule. It's like treat other people the way you would want to be treated. And if someone thinks something sucks, I want to know that. I want to know that you actually mean your opinion so that I can then trust what you're saying. Otherwise, what the hell are we all doing?
Exactly. What's the point? Who cares?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, I'll let you go to your secret meeting that you can't talk about. So.
Yeah. Well, one day, you know, eventually we'll talk about it. I'll go, remember that thing? Yeah, it was this thing. And I'm going to go, okay, cool. Good story, and then we'll move on because it wasn't actually that thing.
That's okay. Thanks for chatting, and if you like the show, support the Patreon. Give us a buck or two a month. The link's right on twomagiciansonemike.com. Or send us a little message, say hello, let us know what you think of the show. What 5 minutes could be cut out of the show? Let us know that.
I love it. Actually, yeah, really do. Like, what's your favorite thing, and what would you cut if you had to cut something?
I hope we get some. I'm sure we'll get a few messages from that.
I love it. What was unnecessary? And, like, the reply comes back, Simon. Simon was unnecessary.
No, I'm pretty sure it would be me. Even though I created the podcast, he'd be like, that's enough. That's enough self-deprecating.
1,000% not be happening if not for Nick. If it was me, I'd be like, wait, how do you upload a thing? What do you compress a thing? Oh, God, I'm busy. Oh, God. I can't even reply to emails in a timely manner, let alone like produce a podcast.
Oh, we know that. We know it takes. I'll send you like three emails.
That's well documented.
But that's okay. That's why we love you and we hate you. So, all right, enjoy Chicago town. We'll talk to you soon.
Branson.
Yay! If you're in Branson, coming out to Silver Dollar City, I'm here for another 2 weeks.
If you're in Chicago, go to the Magic Lounge. I'm not there. It's just great.
It's just great. All right, guys, we'll talk to you later.
Peace out.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at @twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.